Accession number 26752, Reel 5.
Anker Bergman, Reel 5. Yes, if I could ask a little more about your second husband.
Well, his name was Karel Bergman, and I had known him practically all my life because he was a cousin of a girlfriend of mine whom I was with in the pensionnat, and she took me home when she was 11 and I was 12, and by then my future second husband was 27 years old. And I don't know if you know, are aware of the expression or the greeting in Czechoslovakia in those times. You said, "I kiss your hand," if a little girl meets a gentle, old gentleman of some 27. So obviously I said, "I kiss your hand, Mr. Bergman." And he said, "Hello, Aninka." And that's how it started. He didn't dream of it, and neither did I. What will happen? But I met him then on and off, sort of by chance, in Prague or something. And he met my brother-in-law by pure chance in London, because none of them had any money, and all the Czech boys congregated together, and they stayed together in some furnished accommodation. And he, my brother-in-law, knew about him from me, that, oh yes, Karel Bergman, this and that, Karel Bergman, but I mean, that was all. And my brother-in-law sent me a huge case of things, coats and dresses, and for the baby, marvelous. And my RAF, whatever he was, an officer in the end, brought this to home with him, which was very nice. And he brought it to my cousin, who I said took care of me at the time. And I wasn't there because I was in my hometown trying to not to be a burden to my cousin and trying to live somewhere where I belonged, really. But I found out that nobody wanted me, and they behaved terribly.
No. Were there no authorities that you could appeal to? You
know, well, the authorities were the worst of the lot. Because the place was so small, everybody knew everybody, and the chairman of the local authority went to school with my sister, and obviously they disliked each other. But who cares? So they disliked each other. I mean, this is a reason which I give to myself, because I haven't got any other. Maybe he totally forgot that he went to school with her. I don't know. He never spoke to me, and even very officially. And I was allocated this one room without bathroom, without kitchen, nothing for the child, hardly any furniture. No, it was dreadful after the war, which I went through, what I have told you just now, and then coming home was like that.
Did you know at this time what had happened to your... parent.
Yes. Oh, yes. I knew all of that. I was the only one who came back.
And your husband, you knew what had happened to him, did you?
I didn't at the time, or maybe I did, because when I was in Prague at the beginning, a month or so, and I went shopping or something, and I met a friend or sort of acquaintance of mine who happened to be with my husband when he was shot dead. And I am very glad that he told me that point blank and no making a story about it. I knew that there is no reason to wait for anybody. So either I could mourn or I couldn't mourn, but I just knew that he wasn't coming back. Which, in a way, it was another shock when he sort of opened up the conversation with that when I met him in Prague. But he was quite right, absolutely right. Well, I tried to sort of accommodate it somehow or other, but I knew that I don't have to wait for anything because my family wasn't coming and he wasn't coming. But I had my baby, and that was such a help to have the baby, because she had to be fed and dressed and have a roof over her head. That was the biggest help I was ever given. Because I couldn't think of myself. I didn't have time to think of my... I had no money. I didn't know where the next meal is coming from. But I had this background of this marvelous family who wouldn't have let me go down, but I didn't know. And the first money I got from that factory in that place, because I wrote to them, I have come back and I'm the only one, and I was the only heir to what... It was just before the communists took over. And they sent me some money, sort of, to appease themselves. They sent me some money, and I didn't have anything else to do but send it to my father-in-law, who was still in Terezin, before they deported him, and he didn't have anything and anybody. I really couldn't afford it, but I sent him the money because I felt he must have something to fall back on, blind, not knowing the language. It started to be very important to be able to speak Czech at that time. I mean, that was, if you didn't, so you didn't, and there, that was that. Well, anyway, so I sent him the money, and I waited for the next month if they would send me some money, but they did. And it carried on like that. I didn't get the factory back, but they paid me this sort of monthly something. I can't call it. I don't know what I should call it. They paid me a certain sum, which wasn't too much, but it wasn't too little either. I could cope with that, which was actually, they didn't have to, but they did. And but why did I start talking about it?
Yes, it was really how you married your second husband.
Oh, yes. And at that time I was back home in Třebechovice, and he came to my cousin in Prague because he knew that I was sort of stayed with them, and brought this case of some marvelous things from England and all that. Marvelous. And then he waited because there wasn't any reason why he should meet me and go and... He did come to see me in Třebechovice because he wanted to talk and all that. I knew his sister who never came back, and I knew his mother who never came back, and he wanted some details which I couldn't really provide, but all right. And when he saw how I vegetated there, he came back, he didn't say anything to me. He came back to Prague and he went to my cousin and said, this is impossible, she can't stay there, this is inhuman after what she has been through, she can't possibly stay there. And my cousin, Angelique, as she was, and her husband, found me a room on the same corridor in the house in Prague. So I slept in that room and spent all the time with them, and it worked like a dream, and there was never a bad word or look which wasn't quite... It was marvelous, marvelous, really. And, no, indescribable. No, and then Karel came to visit because they took liking to each other, my cousin and her husband and he, because they were age-wise much more related than actually I was, because I was much too young for all that. And I had an inkling that this is the man I would like as a father for my child. Yes, but it doesn't have to come in the transcript, what I will tell you now. Well, I
yes,
got
we
this...
This is on the record, it has to be...
It is on the record. Mm. Well, it doesn't really matter because it turned out all right. But it was the hardest job of my life to make him marry me. It was impossible because he was old, he didn't have any money, he didn't have any job, and there was a little child which had to be taken care of. He was a very reasonable man. No, but I mean, I am very hard-headed, and so is he, but once we were discussing our hard heads, and he said, I am very hard-headed. And I said, not as me. I am more. So that in the end it turned out all right. But we couldn't marry because I didn't have papers, because I was, according to Czech authorities, a German citizen, which I wasn't. Couldn't have been. No, that took another year or so, and then... We got married in February 1948, the day of the communist putsch in Czechoslovakia. And from then, I mean, Karel always kept on saying, we must do some, we must emigrate, we can't stay here, it will be dreadful, the communists will come. He saw it sort of happening. And when the putsch happened, so said, so that's it, and now we have to work at it, how to get out, and if possible legally, and with some lift van, with our things, whatever they will allow us to take, which all happened legally. We got as much as we could. I mean, a lot we couldn't, but that's neither here nor there. We came out as legal emigrants. And not really emigrants, because he was going as a representative of the Czechoslovak button industry to Montreal. But we never ended in Montreal, because when we were in Holland with the relations of my first husband, he got a letter or telephone call or something from his friend in New York, because my second husband spent about 3 years in America as a very young man. And there he met this other man, and they stayed friendly. And this other man had a factory near Cardiff where he had a manager, and that manager was stealing left, right, and center, and he begged Karel to come here and do something about it before it all disintegrates. So instead of going to Montreal, my husband took to whatever, fly, and came to Cardiff to do what he never even looked at. He didn't have what to ask when he got there. And that other man wasn't all that pleased that somebody came to supervise him, and so he wasn't all that friendly. And no, it wasn't very nice. And the Americans paid him very, very little, but all right, that didn't matter. And he found a furnished flat in Cardiff for us, and we followed him up in about a month's time when he was slightly sort of settled. In that furnished flat where I was so happy, I can't tell you, it was horrible, the furniture, everything, but the people who let it to us were charming. And it was my first home, really mine, after the war. We were the three of us together. We didn't have to buy any clothes. We had enough money for food. And it was sheer heaven, absolute heaven, because a unit belonging together.
Must have been a very different culture coming, you know, to Cardiff as it was in those days.
Yes, but I arrived here in December 48 on a bleak, horrible, rainy, you know, windy, most uninviting. And I got out of the train and got out of the Cardiff station, and I don't know why, I said I'll be happy here. But it couldn't have been less inviting. It was a terrible day. And so shortly after the war, nothing was in order. I mean, the houses looked shabby, and no, it was horrible. But I never looked back, and I proved myself right, and it went up and up from then on, because my husband was employed there, and in the end he brought the factory back to what it should have been, and he got rid of that other man who had another factory meanwhile, so it wasn't any hardship. And as the Americans wanted to sell it, so Karel said, well, why don't you sell it to me? And they said, yes, why not, indeed. And so my husband got some money together from here and there and everywhere, and he bought it, and then we started applying to be able to build a house. But as after the war, there was nothing really, no bricks, no mortar. No. We were one of the first ones to get permission to build a house, and this is it.
A lovely house it is, too.
We were limited in size because it was allowed only 1,500 square feet, which is big enough for me. For about 3 years, we would have needed a bigger house. When Eva was growing up and wanted a party, we had to go to the cinema. But never mind, never mind. And we could. It was planned that we could build on the garage, as all the other houses have, but then he died, and it's much too big for me. But anyway, never mind.
Were you able to get your nationality?
In a year, I told you, because
That's
he was...
How unusual was it? To get
it was most unusual, but as he was a member of the RAF, so we had this privilege that we could apply for it after 12 months being in the country. And we got it by the return post, really. No problem. No, and when we got it in our hands, this fantastic blue English passport, that was like being crowned or something, honestly.
Yes. Where is home to you?
This is a very difficult question, because I was glad to leave Czechoslovakia because it was starting to get horrible and one never knew what could have happened. And that was 48, and my first visit back was in 1960. But I had to apply for a visa. I never lost my Czech nationality. You don't. But I had to apply for a visa, and it took weeks, and the questions they asked me, as if I were a criminal or something, but I got it. And everybody says, you must be mad to go back, and they will lock you up, and they will this and that and the other. But as I am very stubborn, as you know by now. So I went, and it was the most marvelous holiday I have ever had. Because as soon as it got around, which it was very quick that I am in Prague, I never knew I had so many friends, really. And everybody wanting to meet. And it was fantastic. And then I came back, and everybody asked me, what was it dreadful? And I said, it was marvelous. Nobody believed me. And from then on, I went once a year, twice a year, three times a year, because my cousin was that much older than I, and it was so much easier for me to go than for her to go. But she came here about three times.
So where is home? Is it here?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know. I loved Czechoslovakia, but Czechoslovakia before 38. Well, that doesn't exist. That was an interval of only 12 years, which it lasted, which is nothing in history, isn't it? And afterwards, it wasn't all that rosy, how I was treated in Třebechovice. But then something happened. The children whom I went to school with, the children, were celebrating when we became 60. Suddenly I had an invitation, printed invitation, that we are 60, we went all to the same class in that elementary school, and that they would be so pleased if I could join them for the celebration. Well, nothing would have held me back from that, of course. And when I came there, and when they were also marvelous to me, and I never met any of those people when I was there those 2 months, which were dreadful. So I can't judge anything, but they were absolutely marvelous. And I was the cat's whiskers, which everybody likes, and all that. And they were really charming too. And then they made these reunions every year, and every year I went for a reunion where I swore I never will go there, go back there. And something else happened. I won't come back to my native town, but I want to say that after 89, when I was given it back, the factory and everything. I mean, they built onto it for the people who had it during the war, but I got back what was there while my father was there. By rights, I mean, it was all right.
Was that after the communist?
After the communist fall. Yes. Mm. And so I was there, and I got the factory back, and as soon as I could, I sold it. And then I got such terribly bad conscience for a change, thinking of my father, that first the Germans took it, then the communists took it, and now I sold it of my own free will. And I really couldn't get out of it. What would my father say that I sold his life's work? But I didn't want to be there. They would have stolen it in bits and pieces without somebody supervising. And I wasn't going to tie myself to a factory. My life was here. And so I sold it very badly, but I'm still glad that I sold it because I got quite a lot of money, which was official, which could be transferred here without tax because it was compensation or something. And I gave it straight to my grandchildren. So, well, anyway, I am just giving you the background. But how I thought of my father, that he would be very cross with me that I sold it of my own. If people take it away from you, all right. But of your own free will, it was bad. Well, there we go. I have survived.
He would have understood the circumstances.
Well, perhaps he would, but I am not so sure.
Yes, When you went back to Czechoslovakia, you live in 1945, was it already obvious then that communism was beginning to...
It wasn't quite obvious, but it was leaning that way.
But you had elections, didn't you?
We had elections, and Beneš was still president, so it was still democratic, let's say. But the communists were getting the upper hand. But it was still within a democratic constitution. But my second husband could see very far in the future. And he had this feeling in many things, not only in that it's bad and we should do something about it. And he was right every time. And I was totally neutral because the reception in Třebechovice was dreadful, so I couldn't be lonely for that. And so I didn't mind at all where we would end up. He wanted.